He's a presiding judge at Chester, and he's also heading up an officials accreditation program across North America. He was recently speaking at the World Trotting Conference, and he's on our line on Trot Radio. He is Mike Hall. Mike, welcome to Trot Radio.
Thanks for having me.
Before we get to the meat and potatoes of what we want to talk about, I understand you were speaking at the World Trotting Conference. You spoke to a rather large group of people. You shared a funny story of how you did a Canadian accreditation program, and after watching a video of a decision that you made, the classroom of judges didn't quite see it the same way?
We watched the video several times and discussed the events that occurred during a race, and then, as we usually do, we took a straw poll vote, and it was 26 people in attendance. 24 people voted against the way that I voted, and one other gentleman was on my side, but not real strongly on my side, I must say, kind of waffling his vote.
Let's talk about some of the specifics that you've stated very bluntly. Let's start with your take on the whipping rule.
I would change the rule because the argument has been that no, from the drivers, in the driver's point of view, that no, we need to be able to whip with the lines in one hand, and we can't drive horses without the lines in one hand. And we all know that that's not true. You can surely drive a horse with or without a whip, and surely with a whip and a line in one hand and a line in the other. And that argument that they need to put the lines in one hand and whip isn't really valid.
Even more frustrating for me, only because I disagree with it, is the argument from the handicappers who say, well, I'm not going to bet Woodbine anymore because they can't freehand whip. I'm going to bet Meadowlands because they'll try harder. I mean, it suggests that all you got to do is keep whipping a horse and it'll go faster.
That's right. We at Chester, we have a lot of good drivers and good horses now.
Right.
If you watch a race, you'll see the guys in contention four or five times hit their horse, and then, you know, when the positions are decided, they'll stop hitting the horse completely.
Sure.
At the smaller tracks, I think, where you see the guys whipping a little bit more, and maybe the horses are a little more experienced and lazy or whatnot, but I can't really see any reason that we can't adopt a rule where they keep any chance.
You mentioned that you like the idea of reins in two hands, but there's a proviso you'd like to add. Is that not correct?
But any rule that would deal with a violation of that would surely not penalize the owner or the people who wager on the horses. It would be a driver's penalty.
Let me take that a step further, because we had a couple of rather large cases of that when we first here in Ontario moved to the new whipping rule. Trevor Ritchie was one in particular. It was a stakes elimination. If the driver takes a line in both lines in one hand, yet doesn't use it to whip the horse, or perhaps doesn't use it so flagrantly, is that cause to punish the driver, not the owners? How do you draw that line?
Well, I think that, and not giving an exact answer to what the rule would be that I would be in favor of, but it would be a severe enough penalty to the driver that he would not think of doing it. Say a 5-day suspension and a large fine, and a 10-day suspension and a larger fine for the second offense. The argument for disqualifying the horse is that, well, an owner could pay a driver a lot of money to use a whip one-handed on his horse in a large race, and it wouldn't cost the driver anything, and the owner would make money from the purse. Well, if you're giving one of the top drivers in the sport 5 or 10 days pension from driving, that is going to be in the thousands and thousands of dollars that they would have earned for that. So I never thought that was a valid argument in the first place, but if you make the penalty severe enough for a violation, if you do have the line in both hands rule, then I don't think you're going to have a problem with
it. So don't set down the horse, but punish the driver, basically.
Exactly.
Okay. And that is in keeping with your philosophy, which I understand is not to take, as best you can, not to take dollars out of the better's hands unless it affects the result of the race. You don't like punishing the better, in other words.
Exactly.
You do something unique at Chester, which I think is very forward-thinking, and that is that in the event of a controversial call, judges will come on the PA and say why they made the changes. How often do you do that?
We do that for every disqualification, and it's not just Chester. It's all three harness tracks in Pennsylvania. And personally, I have been doing that for almost 20 years now, starting out in Ohio and then coming to Pennsylvania when I came to Pennsylvania to work.
So you were doing that before it was even in vogue.
We started that program when I was at Northfield Park back in the early 90s. To lend some credibility to disqualifications. The people who made the disqualifications are the ones that are doing the explaining. And also what goes along with that is we have an email address set up for any questions about any racing at Chester, and 100% of those questions are answered, and we will give particulars to the reasons we made every decision if anybody as a question.
You run a judge's accreditation program. I understand that's a very intense program that judges enlist in. Is that right?
I don't run the program, but I have been an instructor at a few accreditation programs and many continuing ed classes.
I understand more than 1,000 people have participated in what's called Racing Officials Accreditation Program, or ROPE. To me, it says a lot about the importance of a program like that.
It's a very good program run by the Racing Officials Accreditation Program staff and their offices in Kentucky. It's supported industry-wide by Thoroughbreds and Harness, and the people who run it do an excellent job. And the continuing education is extremely important, if you ask me. Gets guys from all over the industry together, such as myself, going to the Maritime Provinces and running a program with them there, and they would have different ideas and rules than I would be in from Pennsylvania. And then when we have them in the U.S., different judges and officials from all the different jurisdictions.
But it's a melding of ideas. I think it's a great thing that you're doing. I want to go through some somewhat rapid-fire questions here and get your take on these. We know what your feeling is on whipping. What's your take on pylons? Would you change anything about the pylons rule?
Depends on what rule you're talking about. The rule that we employ in Pennsylvania states that it'll be the judge's decision as to whether a horse is disqualified or not through the actions or inactions of a driver. The way we go about it is if a person is inside pylons, we'll put the inquiry sign on. We will look at several factors, including how many pylons he was inside.
Is there a minimum in Pennsylvania like in Ontario? What is it down there?
No, there's no minimum. It just states that a driver and horse may be penalized for going inside pylons if, in the judgment of the judges, it affects the outcome of the race. And we may have times where a horse goes inside the last pylon before the passing lane and gains an advantage getting in there early. We might place the horse for going inside one pylon. We may have another instance where a horse is sitting in the two hole and he goes inside two or three pylons in the back stretch or straightaway, and we probably wouldn't place the horse at all. We just gave the driver a penalty. Our feeling is if it doesn't affect the outcome of the race, then we will not disqualify the horse.
Let's talk about slow quarters. There's two trains of thought from the driving community. I suppose the biggest argument is, hey, that's just good old-fashioned hardball driving. If you back up the second quarter, for example, way back, tough for the other guys. You're just dictating the tempo. What's your feeling about that?
Well, I certainly have it a lot easier nowadays than I maybe did 20 years ago at a smaller track. At Chester, they don't slow down too much.
No.
We just like to have them keep going at an honest pace. And I've seen calls made where a guy might go a second quarter in 33 seconds, and he's ahead by 5 lengths, and he'll get a penalty. My thoughts always were on that, what harm did it do if the rest of the field can't keep up anyway? But that's another one I think that should be taken on a case-by-case basis instead of putting a number on a quarter.
Yeah, that's a very interesting way to look at it, and I think it's rather refreshing to hear that you're not really bound by hard and fast rules. You're not a literal interpreter of the rules. You're not fundamentalist, let me put it that way. Another big argument, and this is what you hear from the fans in the stands, driver lets another horse into a hole, and all of a sudden, the fix is in. How do you take that?
I can only speak for myself of mine that has changed over the years, and especially now since we're going first quarters in 26, and the other day at Chester we had a quarter in 25 and a piece. And if someone gets in a hole when they're going 25 and a piece or 26, I don't really think there's much wrongdoing going on when that happens. We do try to discourage the guys from opening up a hole and letting someone in. But on occasion, the drivers will have a good explanation for doing what they did. So we listen to it. If we agree, we agree. And if we don't, we give them a penalty for it. But a lot of times they'll say, well, I wanted them in front of me to get them out of the way, and then I'm going to come out so I don't have to go three wide around them. Or I wanted them in front of me because if I left them out there, the pace was even going to be faster, and I was going about as much as I could. So we take it on a case-by-case basis. And the drivers that we've talked to about it over the last few years really, really have a different strategy for driving than they used to years ago, because they are going so fast. So
this has been very enlightening. Obviously, as a track announcer, I sit next to the judge's booth, but unless you get to talk to one one-on-one, you don't get quite the insights that I've received here. I'm sure our listeners have enjoyed it. Mike Hall, the presiding judge at Chester Downs. Thanks so much for being on Trot Radio.
Okay, thanks a lot.